absently stroked a protective hand over Kara's brow as she watched the man in a hooded cloak descend the ladder. Chapter 13. Nadine paused at her work on the wax seal.
Who?
He's some kind of healer, Colin whispered as she watched the man's methodical descent. From Dahara. I was told he came to offer his services to Richard. I think he's an important person. Nadine grunted dismissively.
What's he going to do without any herbs or things?
She leaned closer while watching him.
He doesn't seem to have anything with him.
Colin shushed her. Stone dust crunched under his boots as he turned, the sound echoing in the hush of the pit. He approached in measured strides. The torch was on the wall behind him, so Colin couldn't see his features in the deeply cowled hood of the voluminous, coarse, flaxen cloak that hung to the floor. He was as tall as Richard, with shoulders just as wide.
Mord Sith, he observed in a voice that was smooth and authoritative, something like Richard's, too.
He brought a hand out of his cloak and gestured. Colin complied, laying Kara on her back on the stone floor. With the way he seemed to study Kara's shivering, Colin didn't want to interrupt for introductions. She just wanted someone to help Kara.
What happened to her?
He asked from the shadow of the cowl, in a voice just as deep and dark.
She had control of a man who...
He had the gift? She was linked with him?
Yes, Colin said. That's what she called it.
He made a sound in his throat as if mentally assimilating the information.
It turned out that the man was possessed by a dreamwalker and...
What's a dreamwalker?
A person, as I understand it, who can invade another person's mind by slipping into the spaces between their thoughts. He gains control of them in this way. He was covertly possessing this man that she linked with.
He considered a moment.
I see. Go on.
We came down here to question the man.
To torture him.
Colin pulled an irritated breath.
No. I told Kara that we were simply going to question him to get answers, if we could.
The man was an assassin, sent to kill Lord Rawl, and if he didn't answer the questions, then Kara was prepared to do what she must to get those answers, to protect Lord Rawl.
But it never got that far. We discovered that this dreamwalker had control of him, control of his gift. The dreamwalker used the man's gift to write a prophecy in the stone behind you.
The healer didn't turn to look.
Then what?
Then he was going to escape and start killing people. Kara tried to stop him.
With her link?
Yes. She let out a scream like I've never heard before and fell to the ground holding her ears.
Colin inclined her head.
Nadine here and I went after the man when he tried to escape. Fortunately, he was killed. When we got back, we found Kara on the floor in convulsions.
You shouldn't have left her alone. She could have choked to death on her own vomit.
Colin pressed her lips together and remained silent. The man just stood there, watching Kara shudder. Finally, Colin could bear it no longer.
This is one of Lord Rawl's personal guards. She's important. Do you intend to help her, or are you just going to stand there?
Quiet, he commanded in a distracted tone. One must observe before one acts, or more harm than help can be the result.
Colin glowered at the shadowed form. At last he sank to his knees and sat back on his heels. He lifted Kara's wrist in one of his big hands, working a finger between her glove and sleeve. He flicked his other hand out over the items on the floor.
What's all this?
They're my things, Nadine said. Her chin rose. I'm a healer.
Still holding Kara's wrist, the man picked up a leather pouch with his other hand, looking at its markings. He set it down and then scooped the two horns from Nadine's lap.
Fever few,
he said as he tossed it back in Nadine's lap. He looked at the symbols on the other.
Betany.
He tossed it back in her lap with the first.
You're not a healer, he said. You're an herb woman.
How dare you?
Did you give her any of your medicines besides the oil of lavender?
How did... I've not had time to give her anything else.
Good, he proclaimed. The oil of lavender won't help her, but at least it won't harm her.
Well, of course I know it's not going to stop the convulsions. It was just to help ease some of her pain. I was going to give her tincture of Maypop for that.
Were you now? Fortunate that I arrived in time, then.
Nadine folded her arms across her breasts.
Why's that?
Because tincture of Maypop would likely have killed her.
Nadine scowled as she unfolded her arms and planted fists on her hips.
Maypop is a powerful sedative. It would likely have halted her convulsions. If you hadn't interfered, I'd have her recovered by now.
Is that so? Did you feel her pulse?
No. Nadine paused warily. Why? What difference could that possibly make?
Her pulse is weak, staggering, and labored. This woman is struggling with all her strength to keep her heart beating. Had you given her your Maypop, it would have done as you said, sedated her. Her heart would have stopped.
I can't see how...
Even a simple herb woman should know to use more caution when dealing with magic.
Magic?
Nadine wilted.
I'm from Westland. I've never seen magic before. I didn't know magic had any effect on healing herbs. I'm sorry.
He ignored the apology and pointed. Undo the buttons and open the top of her outfit.
Why?
Nadine asked. Do it! Or do you favor watching her die? She can't hold on much longer.
Nadine leaned forward and began undoing the row of little red leather buttons along the side of Kara's ribs. When she finished, he gestured for her to open it. Nadine glanced up at Colin. Colin gave her a nod and she pulled back the supple leather, exposing Kara's chest.
May I ask your name?
Colin asked him.
Drefan.
Instead of asking hers, he put an ear to the center of Kara's chest, listening. He shifted around, forcing Colin to scoot out of the way until he was at Kara's head. He briefly inspected the bloody wound above her left ear, and then, seeming to dismiss it as unimportant, went on to systematically probe the base of her neck. Colin could only see the side of his deep cowl and nothing of his face. The single torch didn't provide much light anyway.
Drefan leaned forward and gripped Kara's breasts in his big hands. Colin sat up straighter.
What do you think you're doing?
Examining her.
Is that what you call it?
He sat back on his heels.
Feel her breasts.
Why?
To see what I discovered.
Colin finally turned from the shadow of his cowl and, rather than grabbing her as he had, put the back of her fingers against the side of Kara's left breast. It was hot, burning with a fever. She felt the other. It was ice cold. When Drefan gestured, Nadine followed suit.
What does it mean?
She asked.
I'd like to reserve judgment until I've finished examining her. But it's not good.
He put his fingers to the side of her neck, feeling her pulse again. He ran his thumbs outward along her forehead. He bent and put his ear to each of hers. He smelled her breath. He carefully lifted her head and rotated it. He spread her arms out to the sides, pulled the red leather outfit open further so that Kara's torso was naked to her waist, and then bent over her and palpated her abdomen and up under her ribs. With his head bent as if in concentration, he touched his fingers to the front of her shoulders for a moment, the sides of her neck, the base of her skull, her temples, several places on her ribs, and lastly, to the palms of her hands. Colin was getting impatient. She was seeing a lot of probing and prodding, but very little healing.
Well?
Her aura is seriously snarled, he said, as he brazenly thrust a big hand under the red leather at Kara's waist.
Colin watched in stunned disbelief as his hand slid down to her crotch. She could see his fingers under the tight leather as he worked them into her sex. Hard as she could, Colin fisted him on the nerve at the side of his upper arm. He recoiled in pain. He fell to the side of his hip with a groan, covering his arm where she had clouted him.
I told you, this is an important woman. How dare you grope her like that? I won't have it, do you understand?
I wasn't groping her, he growled.
The heat was still in Colin's voice.
Then what do you call it?
I was trying to determine what this dreamwalker has done to her. He's greatly disturbed her auras, her energy flows, confusing her mind's control of her body. She's not in convulsions, precisely. She's having uncontrolled muscular contractions. I was checking to make sure that he hadn't triggered the part of her brain that controls excitement. I was making sure that he hadn't put her in a state of continual orgasm. I have to know the extent of the blocks and triggers he's disturbed so that I know how to reverse it.
Nadine, eyes widening, leaned forward.
Magic can do such a thing? Make a person have continual...
He nodded as he flexed his sore arm. If the practitioner knows what he's doing.
Can you do such a thing?
She breathed.
No, I don't have the gift, or any other form of magic, but I know how to heal if the damage isn't too great.
The cowl turned toward Colin.
Now, do you wish me to continue, or do you want to watch her die?
Continue.
But if you put your hand down there again, you're going to be a one-handed healer.
I've already learned what I needed to know. Nadine leaned in again.
Is she?
No. He flicked his hand irritably. Pull off her boots. Nadine shuffled around and did as he had ordered. He turned a bit toward Colin as if peering at her from the depths of his cowl. Did you know to hit that particular nerve in my arm with deliberate knowledge, or did you simply get lucky?
Colin studied the shadow, trying to see his eyes. She couldn't. I was trained to do such things, to defend myself and others.
I'm impressed. With such understanding of nerves, you could learn to heal instead of hurt.
He turned his attention to Nadine.
Depress the third anterior axis of the dorsal meridian.
Nadine made a face.
What?
He waggled his hand, pointing.
Between the tendon at the back of her ankles and the prominent bone sticking out to the sides, squeeze there with a thumb and one finger, both ankles.
Nadine did as she was told, while Drefan pressed behind Kara's ears with his little fingers and at the same time on the tops of her shoulders with his thumbs.
Harder, woman!
He put both palms, one hand atop the other, on Kara's sternum.
Second meridian, he murmured.
What?
Move down half an inch and do it again, both ankles.
He moved his fingers on Kara's skull, concentrating on what he was doing.
All right, first meridian.
Another half inch down?
Nadine asked.
Yes, yes, hurry!
He held Kara's elbows between a thumb and finger as he lifted them a few inches. Finally, he sat back on his heels with a sigh.
This is astounding, he muttered to himself. This is not good.
What is it?
Colin asked.
Are you saying that you can't help her?
He waved dismissively as if too distracted to answer.
Answer me,
Colin insisted.
If I wish you to bother me, woman, I will ask.
Nadine leaned forward, cocking her head.
Do you have any idea who you're talking to?
She pointed with her chin, indicating Colin. He was feeling Kara's earlobes.
By the looks of her, I'd say some mucker on the cleaning staff, one in need of a bath.
I've just had a bath, Colin said under her breath. Nadine's voice lowered with import.
You'd better show some respect, Mr. Healer. She's the one who owns this palace, the whole thing. She's the mother confessor herself.
He ran a finger down the inside of Kara's upper arms.
Is that so? Well, good for her. Now be quiet, the both of you.
She's also the betrothed of Lord Richard Rawl himself.
Jeffin's hands froze, his whole body stiffened.
And since Lord Richard Rawl is the master of Dahara, and you're from Dahara, Nadine went on, I reckon that makes him the boss of you. If I were you, I'd be showing a lot more respect for Lord Richard Rawl's future wife. He doesn't like it when people don't show respect for women. I've seen him knock out people's teeth for being disrespectful.
Drefan hadn't moved a muscle. Colin thought Nadine had put it very crudely, but she doubted it could have been any more effective.
Not only that, Nadine added, but she's the one who killed the assassin. With magic.
Drefan finally cleared his throat.
Forgive me, mistress.
Mother confessor,
Colin corrected.
I most humbly beg your forgiveness, mother confessor. I had no idea. I had no intention to cause...
Colin cut him off.
I understand. You are more concerned with healing Kara here than with formalities. So am I. Can you help her?
I can.
Please, get on with it then.
He immediately turned back to Kara. Colin frowned as she watched his hands gliding in patterns over the supine woman, keeping just above her flesh. His hands paused occasionally, fingers trembling with effort at an invisible task. From Kara's feet, Nadine folded her arms again.
You call this healing? My herbs would have had a better effect than this piffle, and a lot sooner, too.
He looked up.
Piffle? Is that what you think this is? Just some nonsense? Do you have the slightest idea, young lady, what we're dealing with?
A paroxysm. It must be ended, not prayed over.
He rose up on his knees.
I am the Rochmos High Priest. I am not given to praying for my healings.
Nadine snorted derisively. He nodded, as if deciding something.
Do you wish to see what we're dealing with? You want proof your simple herb woman eyes can understand?
Nadine scowled.
In view of the lack of results, a little proof would be a fine dish.
He pointed.
I saw a horn of mugwort. Give it here. I presume you have a taper in that bag. Bring it, too, after you light it.
As Nadine took the candle to the torch to light it, Drefan opened his cloak and took several items from a pouch. Nadine handed him the lit candle. He dripped hot wax on the floor to the side and stuck the taper in it. Drefin reached under his cloak and pulled out a long, thin-bladed knife. He leaned over and pressed it between Kara's breasts. A ruby drop grew under the point. He set the knife aside and leaned over her. With a long-handled spoon, he skimmed the blood from her flesh. He sat back, unstopped the horn Nadine had given him, and dumped some mugwort atop the blood in the spoon.
"You call this mugwort? You're only supposed to collect the fluffy underside of the leaf. You've got the whole leaf mixed in with it."
"It doesn't matter. It's all mugwort."
"A very low grade this way. You ought to know to use a high-grade mugwort. What sort of herb woman are you, anyway?"
Nadine squinted in indignation.
"It works just fine. Are you trying to find an excuse to get out of showing us that you know what you're doing? Are you trying to blame your failure on the grade of mugwort?"
"The grade is more than good enough for my purpose, but not for yours."
His tone turned instructional, if not polite.
"Next time, purify the sample you collect, and you will find it to be of more help to those who need it."
He hunched over, holding the spoon to the point of the candle flame until the mugwort ignited, giving off a copious amount of smoke and a heavy, musky odor. Drefin circled the smoking spoon over Kara's stomach, letting the layer of smoke build. He handed the spoon of smoking mugwort to Nadine.
"Hold this between her feet."
He put his fingers to his temples as he murmured a chant under his breath. He took his hands from his head.
"Now watch, and you will see what I can see, what I can feel without the smoke."
He put his thumbs to Kara's temples and his little fingers to the sides of her throat. The thick layer of mugwort smoke jumped. Colin gasped as she saw ropey lines of smoke coiling and snaking all over Kara. Drefin removed his hands, and the smoke trail snapped into a still web of lines. Some arched from her sternum to her breasts, her shoulders, her hips, and her thighs. A tangle of lines went from the top half of her head to points all over her body. Drefin traced one with a finger.
"See this one? From her left temple to her left leg? Watch."
He pressed his fingers to the base of her skull on the left side, and the line of smoke crossed to her right leg.
"There. That's where it belongs."
"What is all that?"
Colin asked in astonishment.
"The meridian lines, the flow of her force, her life, her aura. It's more than that, too, but it's hard to put it all into a few words for you. What I have done is nothing more than the way a shaft of sunlight shows you the dust motes floating in the air."
Nadine, her mouth hanging open, sat frozen, holding the smoking spoon.
"How did you make the line move?"
"By using my life force to compel a healing energy shift where it was needed."
"Then you have magic?"
Nadine breathed.
"No, training. Squeeze her ankles where you did the first time."
Nadine set the spoon down and squeezed Kara's ankles. The tangle of lines going down Kara's legs twisted and untangled, moving from her hips to her feet in straight lines.
"There," Drefin said. "You have just corrected her legs. See how they've stilled?"
"I did that?"
Nadine asked incredulously.
"Yes, but that was the easy part. See here?"
He indicated the web of lines coming from her head.
"This is the dangerous part of what this dreamwalker did. It has to be undone. These lines indicate that she can't control her muscles. She can't speak, and she's been blinded. Look here. This line going from her ears outward and then back to her forehead? That's the only one that's correct. She can hear and understand everything we say, she just can't react to it."
Colin's jaw dropped.
"She can hear us?"
"Every word. Rest assured, she knows we're trying to help her. Now, if you please, I need to concentrate. This all has to be done in the correct order, or we'll lose her."
Colin whisked her hands toward him.
"Of course. Do what you need to do to help her."
Drefin hunched to his task, working his way around Kara's body, pressing fingers or the flats of his hands to various places on her. At times he used the knife point. He never drew more than a drop of blood as he pressed it into her flesh. At nearly each thing he did, some of the ropey lines of smoke moved, untangling, some laying down against Kara's body, and others curving outward in a smooth arch before returning to a spot he had attended. When he compressed the flesh between her thumb and first finger, not only did the smoke lines over her arms straighten, but Kara moaned in relief as she twisted her head and rolled her shoulders. It was the first normal response of any kind Kara had given. When he pierced the tops of her ankles with his knife, she gasped and began to breathe with a steady, if rapid, rhythm. Relief and hope flooded through Colin. He at last had moved all the way around her and was working at her head, pressing his thumbs along the bridge of her nose and across her forehead. Her whole body was still, no longer shaking and quivering. Her chest rose and fell without effort. He pressed the knife point between her eyebrows.
"That should take care of it," he murmured to himself.
Kara's blue eyes opened. They searched about until they found Colin.
"I heard your words," she whispered. "Thank you, my sister."
Colin smiled her relief. She knew what Kara meant. Kara had, after all, heard Colin tell her that she wasn't alone.
"I got Marlin."
Kara smiled.
"You make me proud to serve with you. I regret that you have gone to all this effort healing me for nothing."
Colin frowned, not knowing what she meant. Kara rolled her head back, looking up at Drefin as he hunched over her.
"How do you feel?" he asked. "Is everything feeling normal now?"
Her brow drew together with a look of foggy confusion bordering on alarm.
"Lord Rahl?"
she asked incredulously.
"No, I'm Drefin."
With both hands, he laid back his cowl. Colin's eyes went wide, along with Nadine's.
"But my father, too, was Darkin Rahl. I am Lord Rahl's half-brother."
Colin stared in wonder. Same size, same muscular build as Richard. Blonde hair like Darkin Rahl's, although shorter and not so straight. Richard's hair was darker and coarser. Drefin's eyes, piercing blue like Darkin Rahl's rather than gray like Richard's, nonetheless bore the same cutting raptor rake. His features possessed that impossibly handsome perfection of a statue that Darkin Rahl's had. Richard hadn't inherited that cruel perfection. Drefin's looks, somewhere in the middle, leaned more toward Darkin Rahl than Richard. But while no one would mistake Drefin for Richard, they would have no trouble telling that they were brothers. She wondered why Kara had made that mistake. Then she saw the Aegil in Kara's fist. That wasn't what Kara had meant by Lord Rahl. In a confused state, looking at him upside down as she regained consciousness, she hadn't thought he was Richard. She had thought he was Darkin Rahl. Chapter 14. The only sound in the otherwise dead silence was the click, click, click of Richard's thumbnail on one of the points of the recurved crossguard on his sword. The elbow of his other arm rested on the polished tabletop while he cradled his head between a thumb under his chin and his first finger along his temple. With a calm face, he did his best to control his anger. He was furious. This time they had crossed the line and they knew it. In his mind he had gone over a whole list of possible punishments, but had rejected them all, not because they were too harsh, but because he knew they wouldn't work. In the end, he settled on the truth. There was nothing harsher than the truth, and nothing else as likely to get through to them. Before him, in a row, stood Berdine, Reyna, Ulick, and Egan. They stood stiffly, their eyes focused at some point over his head and behind him, as he sat at the table in the small room he used for meeting with people, reading, and various other work. To the side of the table hung small landscape paintings of idyllic country scenes, but from the window behind, from which streamed the low-angled rays of morning sunlight, the massive, baleful stone face of the wizard's keep glared down on him. He had been back in Adendrill for only an hour, long enough to discover what had happened after he had left the evening before. All four of his guards had been back since before dawn. He had ordered them to return to Adendrill after Reyna and Egan had sauntered into camp the night before. They had thought he wouldn't make them return in the dead of night. They had been wrong. As brazen as they ordinarily were, the look in his eyes had ensured that none of the four dared disobey that order. Richard had also returned much earlier than he had planned. He had pointed out the quench oak to the soldiers, told them what to collect, and then, instead of overseeing the task, had started back alone for Adendrill before the sun was up. After what he had seen in the night, he'd been too troubled to get any sleep, and had wanted to be back in Adendrill as soon as possible. Drumming his finger on the tabletop, Richard watched his guards, sweating. Verdine and Raina wore their brown leather outfits, their long braided hair disheveled from their hard ride. The two great, blond-headed men, Ulick and Egan, wore uniforms of dark leather straps, plates, and belts. The thick leather plates were molded to fit like a second skin over the conspicuous contours of their muscles. Incised in the leather at the center of their chests was an ornate letter R for the House of Rawl, and beneath that, two crossed swords. Around their arms, just above their elbows, they wore golden bands brandishing razor-sharp projections, weapons for close combat. No Daharan but the Lord Rawl's personal bodyguards wore such weapons. They were more than simply weapons. They were the rarest, the highest badges of honor, earned he knew not how. Richard had inherited the rule of a people he didn't know, with customs that were mostly a mystery to him, and expectations he only partly fathomed. Since they had returned, these four, too, had discovered what had happened with Marlin the night before. They knew why they had been summoned, but he hadn't said anything to them yet. He was trying to get a grip on his rage first.
Lord Rawl.
Yes, Raina.
Are you angry with us for disobeying your orders and coming out to you with the Mother Confessor's message?
The message had been a pretense, and they knew it as well as he.
Click, 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 went his thumbnail.
That will be all. You may go, all of you.
Their postures relaxed, but none made a move to leave.
Leave?
Raina asked.
Aren't you going to punish us?
A smirk spread on her face.
Maybe clean out the stables for a week or something.
Richard pushed back from the table as he ground his teeth. He was not in the mood for their impish humor. He rose behind the table.
No, Raina, no punishment. You may go.
The two Mord Sith smiled. Verdine leaned toward Raina, speaking in a whisper, but loud enough for him to hear.
He realizes that we know best how to protect him.
They all started for the door.
Before you go, Richard said as he strolled around the table, I just want you to know one thing.
What's that?
Verdine asked. Richard walked past them, pausing long enough to look each in the eye.
That I'm disappointed in you.
Raina made a face.
You're disappointed in us. You're not going to yell or punish us. You're simply disappointed.
That's right. You've disappointed me. I thought I could trust you.
I can't. Richard turned away.
Dismissed.
Verdine cleared her throat.
Lord Rawl, Ulick and I went with you by your command.
Oh? So if it had been you I'd left here to protect Colin instead of Raina, you would have done as I asked and stayed?
She didn't answer.
I've counted on all of you, and you've made me feel a fool for trusting you.
He flexed his fists instead of yelling.
I would have seen to Colin's protection if I'd known I couldn't trust you.
Richard leaned an arm against the window frame and stared out at the cold spring morning. The four behind him shifted their feet uneasily.
Lord Rawl,
Verdine said at last,
we would lay down our lives for you.
Richard rounded on them.
And let Colin die?
He carefully quieted his tone. You can lay down your lives for me all you want. Play your games all you want. Pretend you're doing something important. Play at being my guards. Just stay out of my way and out of the way of people helping me in this effort to stop the Imperial Order. He flicked his hand toward the door.
Dismissed.
Verdine and Raina shared a look.
We will be outside in the hall if you need us, Lord Rawl.
Richard gave them such a cold look that it drained the color from their faces.
I won't be needing you. I don't need people I can't trust.
Verdine swallowed.
But what?
She swallowed again.
What about Kolo's journal? Don't you want me to help you with the translation?
I'll manage. Anything else?
Each of them shook their heads. They began filing out. Raina, at the end of the line, paused and turned back, her dark eyes fixed on the floor.
Lord Rawl, will you be taking us out later to feed the chipmunks?
I'm busy. They'll manage just fine without us.
What about Reggie?
Who?
Reggie? He's the one missing the end of his little tail. He sat in my hand. He'll be looking for us.
Richard watched her for a silence-filled eternity. He teetered between wanting to hug her and wanting to yell at her. He had tried the hugging, or its equivalent anyway, and it had nearly gotten Colin killed.
Maybe another day. Dismissed.
She wiped the back of her hand across her nose.
Yes, Lord Rawl.
Raina quietly pulled the door closed behind her. Richard raked back his hair as he flopped down in his chair again. With a finger, he slowly spun Kolo's journal around and around as he ground his teeth. Colin could have died while he was off looking for trees. Colin could have died while the people he thought were protecting her were instead following their own agenda. He shuddered to think what the added magic, the added rage of the sword would do were he to draw it at that moment. He couldn't recall being this angry without the Sword of Truth in his hand. He couldn't imagine the wrath of the sword's magic on top of this. The words of the prophecy from the stone wall in the pit ran through his mind with haunting, mocking finality. A soft knock silenced the hundredth, whispered sound of the prophecy in his head. This was the knock he had been waiting for. He knew who it was.
Come in, Kara.
The tall, muscular, blond-haired Mord Sith slunk in through the door. She pushed it closed with her back. Her head was bent, and she looked as miserable as he had ever seen her.
May I speak with you, Lord Rawl?
Why are you wearing your red leather?
She swallowed before answering.
It's a Mord Sith thing, Lord Rawl.
He didn't ask for an explanation. He didn't really care. This was the one he had been waiting for. This was the one who was at the core of his wrath.
I see. What do you want?
Kara approached the table and stood with her shoulders slumped. She had a bandage around her head, but he had been told that her head wound wasn't serious. By the red-rimmed look of her eyes, it was obvious that she hadn't slept the night before.
How is the Mother Confessor this morning?
When I left her, she was resting, but she's going to be fine. Her wounds weren't serious as they easily could have been. She's lucky to be alive, considering what happened. Considering that she wasn't supposed to have been down there with Marlin in the first place. Considering that I specifically told you that I didn't want either of you down there.
Kara's eyes closed.
Lord Rawl, it was my fault entirely. I'm the one who talked her into it. I wanted to question Marlin. She tried to convince me to stay away, but I went anyway. She only went to try to make me leave him be, as you had instructed.
Had Richard not been so angry, he might have laughed. Even if Colin hadn't admitted the truth to him, he knew her well enough to recognize Kara's confession as pure fiction. But he also knew that Kara hadn't put in much of an effort to keep Colin away from the assassin.
I thought that I had control of him. I made a mistake.
Richard leaned forward. Didn't I specifically tell you that I didn't want either of you down there? Her shoulders trembled as she nodded without looking up. His fist hitting the table made her flinch.
Answer me! Didn't I specifically tell you that I didn't want either of you down there?
Yes, Lord Rawl.
Was there any doubt in your mind what I meant?
No, Lord Rawl.
Richard leaned back in his chair.
That was the mistake, Kara. Do you understand? Not that you didn't have control of him, that was beyond your power. Going down there was a choice you made, that was the mistake you made. I love Colin more than anything in this world, or anything in any other world. Nothing else is so precious to me. I trusted you to protect her, to keep her out of harm's view.
The sunlight coming through the patterned shears played across her red leather in dappled patches like sunlight coming through leaves.
Lord Rawl,
she said in a small voice,
I fully understand the dimensions of my failure and what it means. Lord Rawl, may I be granted a request?
What is it?
She sank to her knees, bending forward in supplication. She took up her Ajeel, holding it in both trembling fists.
May I choose the manner of my execution?
What?
A Mord Sith wears her red leather at her execution.
If she has previously served with honor, she is allowed to choose the manner of execution.
And what would you choose?
My Aegeal, Lord Rall, I know how I have failed you. I have committed an unforgivable transgression. But I have served with honor in the past. Please, allow it to be with my Aegeal. It's my only request. Either Berdeen or Rayna can carry it out. They know how.
Richard walked around the table. He leaned back against its edge, looking down at Kara's slumped, quivering form. He folded his arms.
Denied.
Her shoulders shuddered with a sob.
May I ask what Lord Rall will choose?
Kara, look at me, he said in a soft voice. Her tear-stained face came up. Kara, I'm angry. But no matter how angry I was, I would never, ever have you, any of you, executed.
You must. I have failed you. I have disobeyed your orders to protect your love. I have made an unforgivable mistake.
Richard smiled. I don't know that there are unforgivable mistakes. There may be unforgivable betrayals, but not mistakes. If we were going to start executing people for mistakes, I'm afraid I'd have been dead long ago. I make mistakes all the time. Some of them have been pretty big.
She shook her head as she gazed into his eyes. A Mord Sith knows when she has earned execution. I have earned it.
In those blue eyes, he saw the iron of her resolution.
Either you carry it out, or I will.
Richard stood for a time, judging the demand of duty to which a Mord Sith was bound, judging the madness in those eyes.
Do you wish to die, Kara?
No, Lord Rall. Since you have been our Lord Rall, never. That is why I must. I have failed you. A Mord Sith lives and dies by a code of duty to her master. Neither you nor I can alter what must be. My life is forfeit. You must carry out the execution, or I will.
Richard knew that she wasn't making a play for sympathy. Mord Sith didn't bluff. If he didn't somehow change her mind, she would do as she promised. With comprehension and the resulting sickening realization of his only choice, he made the mental leap off the rim of sanity and into the madness where dwelt part of this woman's mind and, he feared, part of his. As irretrievable as a heartbeat, the decision had been made. Muscles flexing with the call, he drew his sword. It sent the soft, matchless ring of steel through the room, through his bones. With that seemingly simple act, the wrath of the sword's magic was loosed. The lock on the door to death was slipped free. It took his breath like a wall of an acid wind. Storms of rage lifted on that biting wind. Magic, then, he told her, will be your judge and executioner. Her eyes squeezed shut. Look at me! The sword's rage twisted through him, trying to carry him away with it. He fought to maintain his grip of control, as he always had to do when he held the fury unleashed. You will look into my eyes when I kill you. Her eyes opened, her brow wrinkled together, tears streaming down her cheeks. Any good she had done, any bravery in the face of danger, any sacrifice to her duty, had been stripped away in the face of her disgrace. She had been denied the honor of a death by her Aegeal. For that, and that alone, she cried. Richard pressed the razor-sharp edge to his forearm, drawing for the blade its taste of blood. He brought the Sword of Truth to his forehead, touching the cold steel, the warm blood, to his flesh. He whispered his invocation.
Blade, be true this day.
This was the person who, for her presumption and but for luck, would have cost him Colin, cost him everything. She watched as the blade rose above him. She saw the fury, the righteous rage in his eyes. She saw the magic dancing there. She saw death dancing there. The knuckles of both fists were white as he gripped the hilt. He knew he couldn't deny the magic its will, if he was to have a chance. He loosed his wrath at this woman for abandoning her responsibility to protect Colin.
Her arrogance could have ended Colin's life, ended his future, ended his reason for living. He had entrusted his dearest love to her care, and she had failed in her duty to honor his faith. He could have returned to find Colin dead because of this woman on her knees before him, for no other reason. Their eyes shared the madness of what they were doing, of what they each had become, of knowing that there was no other way for either of them. He committed to cleave her in two. The sword's wrath demanded it. He would accept no less. He envisioned it. He would have it. Her blood. With a scream of rage, with all his strength, with all his fury and anger, he swung the blade down toward her face. The sword's tip whistled. In every detail, he could see the light glint off the polished blade as it swept through a streamer of sunlight. He could see drops of his sweat sparkle in the sunlight as if frozen in space. He could have counted them. He could see where the blade would hit her. She could see where the blade was going to hit her. His muscles screamed with the effort as his lungs screamed with rage. Between her eyes, an inch from her flesh, the blade stopped as solidly as if it had thunked into an impenetrable wall. Sweat rolled down his face. His arms shook. The room echoed with the lingering sound of his cry of fury. At last, he withdrew the blade from over Kara. She stared up with big, round, unblinking eyes. She was panting in rapid, short breaths through her mouth. A long, low whine came from her throat.
"There will be no execution," Richard said in a hoarse voice.
"How?" she whispered. "How could it do that? How could it stop like that?"
"I'm sorry, Kara, but the sword's magic has made the choice. It has chosen that you live. You will have to abide by its decision."
This is the end of this cassette. This book is continued on cassette number 3. You should adjust your balance control to the full left position and continue listening on part A of cassette number 3.